Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview three veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 34 with Molly Laufer.
In a brand new early stage startup, no one can be above doing something. So as the months rolled on, I actually started to get a better appreciation for just how much a startup was like parts of my military experience. And I really kind of like leaned in and relied on that experience and saying, okay, I've never done marketing. I've never worked at a CPG company. I've never worked at an e-commerce company. But you know what I have done? I've worked in really chaotic environments without a lot of guidance, where we just all had to roll up our sleeves and just get it done. So I might not know startups, I might not know marketing, I might not know food, but I know how to operate in this environment. So, you know, trust yourself, trust your gut that you can do this.
Top three reasons to listen to today's episode. Number one, startups. Molly was the very first employee at the Bay Area startup NatureBox, a company that now has over 100 employees and $58 million in funding. This is the most extreme example I've had on the show so far of someone going straight from active duty into an early stage and high growth startup. She talks about what life was like, the roles she took, and which other veterans are well suited for, and advice for other veterans looking to break into the startup scene. Number two, career coach. When Molly made her transition, she used a career coach to help her better identify the exact type of job that would light her up. Molly gives a great overview of career coaches, what they do, where to find them, what sort of work you'll do together, and how they are truly the only person in your corner who does not have a conflict of interest when they guide you in your career decisions. This has been a common criticism of recruiters. Number three, networking. Of course, the full show notes with times of the different interview segments are at beyondtheuniform.io, but around minute 17, Molly does a great job of breaking down a very specific email and talk track she used to spoon-feed everyone around her so that they became resources for her in finding her next job, which coincidentally is how she found her way to NatureBox. So without further ado, here is my interview with Molly Laufer. Well, my guest today is Molly Laufer. Molly, thanks for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background about Molly. She is the director of client strategy in the marketing and advertising space with the company Oxford Road, which is the fastest growing full-service ad agency serving the consumer tech industry. She started out at the University of Virginia, where she did ROTC and earned a Bachelor of Arts in Foreign Affairs and Russian. And she served for 4 years in the Navy as a surface warfare officer, serving on board the frigate, the USS Samuel B. Roberts, as well as with Destroyer Squadron 23. When she transitioned from the Navy, she was the first employee of the startup NatureBox, a company that now has over 100 employees and has raised over $58 million in funding. At NatureBox, she started with social media and content marketing and eventually became their director of customer acquisition. So, Molly, to start off, anything to add about your bio or your personal life?
No, I think you covered it really well. I have jumped around a lot between the military to startups to advertising, but there are a lot of common themes that really flow through those three very different career paths, and I'm excited to share more.
Awesome. Well, let's start out with at what point you knew you were going to leave the military and how you approached that decision.
You know, it's interesting because I know that for every person, the reason and the motivations for leaving the military can really vary. I'll be very transparent with what mine were. I was coming up at the end of my 4 years. I was getting ready to roll to shore duty, the glorious shore duty that everyone waits. Everyone who spends 4 years at sea duty waits to be able to have that opportunity to not deploy and you know, work sort of more, quote, normal hours. So I was coming up on my shore duty. And at the time, my husband was applying to business school, and he was accepted to business school in the Bay Area. For those of you who aren't familiar, there are not exactly a lot of Navy ships or naval facilities and outputs here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So at that point, I made the decision to transition out so that we could stay living together in the same city. And a lot of that was obviously influenced by the time that we had spent separated over the 4 years. I did a number of deployments and just decided that personally that wasn't where I saw my career or my personal life going and made the decision to separate from active duty at the same time and start my career in a completely new field up in San Francisco.
Wow. And I'm assuming then, did you make a clean break and not do reserves, or how did you think about reserves?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I thought pretty carefully about the reserve, duties that were offered at the time. A couple of things went through my mind. So the first was, would I ever think about going back on active duty at any stage of my career? And if so, would being in the reserves for a period of time be helpful for that? To be honest, at the time, I didn't really think of any area where I would end up going back into the reserves. The second thing was, I had no idea what life in the civilian world would be like, right? You hear that it's 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. Employers are very supportive. Obviously, legally, they have to be, and morally, they should be very supportive of veterans who choose to serve in the reserves. But I just didn't really know what my life was going to look like once I had left the service and was in the civilian world. So I decided that I wanted to make a 100% clean break. And to be honest, my last deployment, when I was on active duty, I spent it deployed with a number of reservists who had gotten caught up on what we called at the time an individual augmentee. And they were service members that had a very similar background to me. So to be honest, I was pretty afraid of that at the time and decided that it was not an area that I wanted to invest my life in. Now, the funny thing is, now that I work in advertising, I spend a lot of time, I do a lot of TV media buying. And so one of the things I'm particularly interested in right now is the military's media strategy, specifically things like TV and media. So now there are definitely some times where I look back and say, maybe I should have thought to stay in the reserves. I maybe could have parlayed some of my experience now into doing media and media buying for the military. But, you know, I think, pun intended, that ship may have sailed for me.
That's awesome. And when you look back on that transition from military to civilian life, what were some of the more surprising aspects of that transition?
So, yeah, that's an excellent question. Gosh, I feel like I could talk for the next hour on it, so I'll try to find a more succinct way of articulating it. So the first thing that was really surprising to me was how much of the onus of owning my career was really on me. And that there were a lot of people out there. There was a lot of organizations, and there were headhunters and there were recruiters. And there are a few areas and lanes that you can find yourself in to sort of navigate the career space when you're transitioning to the civilian world. But no one was going to make any of those decisions for you. And more importantly, there were a lot of factors that you had to consider, that when you were in the military, you were more limited in the areas that you could be stationed, the communities that you could choose. So there was sort of a natural weaning down of options for me, at least when I was in the military. What I was shocked to find out was just how many options. We're talking about the length of your commute. What is your salary compensation? What is your equity part of your compensation? Who is your boss? Who are the people that report to you? What industry do you want to be in? And I feel like a lot of times when I was transitioning, and I still hear this to this day, and that is, what industry you want to be in? Well, the industry is only one very small piece of the puzzle. And as I started to be able to more succinctly articulate the industry and the type of role that I was looking for, I just found that I continued to open up Pandora's box of questions and opportunities that I would have to figure out for myself.
That's great. I mean, it seems like there's no way to shortcut that either. It's just a matter of getting more experience and more exposure, and through that experience and exposure, figuring out what you'd want to do or what you'd like to do more of.
Exactly. So for me, you know, so I ended up working with a career kind of counselor, I would describe her at the time. And what we started working through at the very high level was, what types of things are you interested in? What types of things do you like to learn about? And what kind of problems would you like to solve? Which is very sort of touchy-feely high level compared to, what industry do you want to be in and what do you want your job title to be? Those last two areas around industry and job title didn't come in until much farther down in kind of the funnel of my career transition, because I first had to figure out, what types of things do I enjoy doing? What kind of environments do I like to be in? Would I be successful in? And what kind of problem do I want to solve? And I think I tried to come in a little too narrow in the beginning, and I got really frustrated. And I got frustrated because I couldn't find what I was looking for. And the reason for that was, I actually didn't know what I was looking for until someone asked me, until I had to actually articulate and think about what that answer was.
I really like the thought of having a career counselor or coach helping someone through this process. And for someone listening who's interested in learning more about that, any advice on how to find someone or how to find the right fit where that coach might add more value in the process?
Yes, that's a great question. I would recommend asking any friends or coworkers or peers who have recently transitioned the resources that they would recommend. Because when you are transitioning out of the military, you're going to be hit up on from all angles. There's different recruiters, different headhunters. Perhaps you're looking at an educational opportunity, so you're looking at different colleges or graduate programs. The options can be overwhelming, and it's hard to know what environment or what support system is going to be right for you. You know, when I got out, I had only been in for about 4 years, and most of my peers were staying in at the time. And so I didn't have a lot of peers that were also transitioning that I could have asked. Who did you work with somebody, or what resources did you find useful? And again, a lot of that is going to be a function of when you transition relative to your peer group. But if you have someone that you trust and you can ask for their recommendation, that I think would go a long way to helping you find a resource that's going to be a good fit for you. I mean, that's the most important thing. And what I found was when I tried to rely too heavily on certain recruiters or headhunters, I realized that, you know, our goals may have been not necessarily aligned. And it was most important for me to find someone who was very, whose only goal was finding what was the right thing for Molly Lauffer.
Oh, I love that. What was that for someone who may not have worked with a coach before or a counselor before? What was that process like? Like, how often did you meet with them and for how long?
Great question. So we would work together usually about once a week, sometimes once every other week. And in the beginning, I actually did a lot of career exercises, a lot of sort of career life visioning exercises. There were some quizzes that you would take, kind of like personality type tests to understand what types of environments do you learn well in. So that was where I started. And then as I started to see the results of these tests and do my own research out in the actual market where I was going to be, living and wanted to find a job, we would check in and touch base usually once a week around what were the opportunities that I have found, how do you position your resume, how do you position your experience, and then how do you prepare for those informational interviews and eventual actual interviews as you went through the process.
And let's talk about NatureBox. You know, when you were leaving the military, how did you approach that first job search? What did you learn along the way? And how did you end up at NatureBox?
Oh, man, this is such a fun story. So I will admit, looking back, it's really easy to put the pieces together and say, oh, that was very clear. It was very obvious how you went from point A to point B to point C. But in the moment, I felt really disorganized, I'll be honest. And I felt like I didn't have a great sense of direction. And the reason I say that is because I have to imagine there's a lot of other service members or veterans who are in the middle of a transition or about to a new transition. And it's easy to look at other people and say, wow, they really just landed in that spot and everything's working out great for them. And it is, you know, I think it is, especially when I look at the other service members that you've profiled, it's amazing to see how many people have landed in the right spot. But knowing that it didn't necessarily come easily or obviously, more important, I think, you know, I want to kind of put that out there because I think it is worth noting. So getting back to 4 years ago, when I actually made this transition, I started networking in the Bay Area because I wanted to work in a startup. I decided that a startup was where I wanted to work because I was living in Silicon Valley and that's what you did. What I had no concept or appreciation of was just how broad that word was. When you say, oh, you want to work at a startup, right? Is Facebook a startup? Is Google a startup? Do you like enterprise cloud solutions? Are you interested in technology? Are you interested in food? Are you interested in consumer products, right? These were questions that once I told someone I was interested in working at a startup, I realized just how much there was to unpack there. So that was really the first lesson that I took away. And that is, when you meet someone and they ask, what are you looking for? What do you want to do? You have to be a little bit more specific than I want to work at a startup. Now, the second thing I would say to that is, but don't be too specific. And I realized that I just sort of talked out of both sides of my mouth by saying, you need to be specific in what you're looking for, but don't be too specific. And that's the second takeaway that I had, right? Which was, the more I started to learn about startups, the more I realized how nebulous they were, how unlike the military, at least in terms of kind of hiring and the org chart, let's say, for lack of a better word. So how sort of less complex they were and how nebulous they were in terms of, oh, you know, we may have some jobs posted on our website, but we may not. And the only way to find out was to start talking and to start networking to people. And I'd always heard this word networking. Oh, you have to network. You got to network. The only way people find jobs these days is by networking. But I didn't appreciate what that actually meant and what that actually entailed until I realized how important it was for me to be able to articulate, at least in a kind of roughly structured fashion, what I was looking for.
What one thought that comes up, because so it sounds like you were in the Bay Area, you knew you wanted to do startups. I did want to ask as well, though, because your husband was going to business school. How did you weigh then whether or not to go to grad school versus go straight into industry?
Well, I mean, in the beginning, it was pretty easy. It was one of us has got to work. and also, you know, I made the decision to get out basically after he had already applied and gotten accepted too. So I'll admit, like, it was definitely something that I toyed with in the first couple of months of my transition. And to be honest, I'm a really transparent person. And I think that's probably going to be most helpful for listeners. So I'll go ahead and say that in the beginning, when I was still doing my job search and he was in business school, there were definitely some feelings of jealousy, that maybe I had made a mistake, by even getting out of the military, right? You know, you meet all these people. I would meet his classmates that seemed really, really successful and were going on to new exciting career opportunities. And I thought, gosh, I just left an industry that I was really good at. And yeah, it had its faults and it wasn't the right for me long term, but I knew what I was doing and I was secure and I was comfortable and I was on a good path. And then the next thing I would think of was, well, gosh, why didn't I go to business school? I should have done this. Look at all these other veterans that are going to business school. They're going to have their career path mapped out for them perfectly. They're going to have this wonderful advantage, which was, to be honest, that was my feeling for a lot of those months in the beginning. Again, when you look back, it's always easier to connect the dots and connect the pieces. And I'm actually quite glad that I didn't do that. And the reason for that, and to answer your original question, which I realize I've neglected to do, and that is, how did I end up at NatureBox? And so while I was going through this experience of meeting people and networking and starting to be able to articulate what it was that I wanted to do and what industries interest me, what I found was that there were a lot of companies that were in the food and nutrition and health space, which is something that I was just naturally very passionate about. Actually, my career coach asked me, if money wasn't an object, what would you do all day? And I think I said, like, I would bake and cook and eat food, which I haven't found a way yet to make that a well-paying, lucrative career. But she said, okay, good. So maybe you should look at startups in the food and health and fitness space. And, you know, when you're new to Silicon Valley, I didn't even know that that was an option, right? I thought everyone was doing, you know, cloud computing, cloud storage. And then I started educating myself. I started reading TechCrunch every day. I would Google companies that I thought were really interesting that I was using, and I would go to their job pages. And so throughout all of this research, I realized, wow, there are a lot of companies that are out there that are doing interesting things in the food and health and fitness space that I could potentially be a part of. Once I had that focus narrowed down to the type of industry, I was more targeted and more calculated in my asks. So when I would meet someone, I would say, hi, I'm Molly. I just got out of the Navy. And these are the industries that I'm interested in. These are the types of roles that I'm interested in. For me at the time, it was marketing and social media. Do you know anyone who's in that space that would be open to having a conversation with me about what it's like to be in a similar position? I'd love to hear what it's like to work at a food or health or fitness startup.
I love that. I think that's such a great, actionable, concise way of putting it. And I'm just thinking of all the emails I've received where someone says, hey, I'm moving to the Bay Area. Do you know anyone who's hiring that I should talk to? And it's like, that is so unusable. I need something to grasp onto. Like do the homework for me. Tell me the industry, the size company, or better yet, come to me with a list of names. But to like put the burden on me to figure out where you should work, it's just too much. But I love the way you just gave me everything I need to know. And instantly my mind goes through my Rolodex of who do I know in that space? How can I help you? Because I think the desire is there to help other people, but can it be actionable?
Yes. Yes, that is the biggest. It's when I look back and kind of when I have those cringeworthy moments of my decisions and my past, that's absolutely where I cringe, right? When I realize that maybe I didn't do that, or that I asked someone for a very vague, very broad, I asked them for a very broad request that surely they wouldn't have been able to help me.
I imagine almost everyone in certainly in the Bay Area and quite possibly, you know, the major cities knows NatureBox very well. They have an incredible reputation. What were they like when you first joined them? And what was it like being the very first employee at a startup?
So it was very different than being in the military is the first thing I would say. I joined the company, as you mentioned, as the first employee. It was myself and two co-founders. We worked out of kind of a desk out of the office of the venture capital firm who had done our seed round. We worked there for about 6 or 7 months until we hired two more employees and needed to actually move out to our own office space. I guess looking back, I couldn't believe how much work there was to do all the time. And that this idea of being comfortable and being open to wearing a lot of hats, was absolutely kind of the biggest, I guess, character trait that I realized I had to have. We packed boxes by hand. We packed snack bags into boxes by hand. We answered customer service emails on the nights, on the weekends and at night. I wrote copy for the website. I wrote ad copy. We helped pick snack products. Everything you can imagine and more. The only way it was going to get done was if someone actually did it, right? Which is if one of the three of us actually did it. Very much roll up your sleeves. No one is above, like in a brand new early stage startup, no one can be above doing something. So as the months rolled on, I actually started to get a better appreciation for just how much a startup was like parts of my military experience. And I really kind of like leaned in and relied on that experience and saying, okay, I've never done marketing. I've never worked at a CPG company. I've never worked at an e-commerce company. But you know what I have done? I've worked in really chaotic environments without a lot of guidance, where we just all had to roll up our sleeves and just get it done. So I might not know startups. I might not know marketing. I might not know food. But I know how to operate in this environment. So, you know, trust yourself, trust your gut that you can do this. Like, I had to give myself a lot of pep talks. I'm not going to lie. looking back in those early years, there was a lot of pep talking that had to happen. But it was an incredible experience just not being too proud to do a task that had to get done. Because if you didn't, there was no one else to rely on to do it.
I didn't realize you were the only employee there for 6 months. I mean, that's a significant amount of time, and I'm imagining a significant amount of growth where it's just you and the two co-founders. That's incredible.
Yep. It was a really interesting experience because after that, the growth happened astronomically. When I left, we were close to 100 employees, and obviously had hit many points of growing pains over those 4 years, which fortunately we overcome just about all of them. But it gave me so many experiences in a really short period of time. I always say startup years are kind of like dog years. Like every year at a startup is like 4 at a regular company. And take this with a grain of salt because I've never worked at, quote, a regular company. So I'm not sure if I'm actually qualified to make that statement, but I feel pretty good about it.
That's incredible. So one thing I was curious about is you held a couple different roles. So first of all, like you said, you're wearing a variety of hats while you're at NatureBox, but you had three different titles while you were there. Especially for like a military audience or a veteran audience, could you explain the gist of what those titles were and what that translated to in terms of what you were doing?
Definitely. And I think actually the transition between the roles will be pretty helpful because kind of each role sort of built on the one prior. So when I first came in, I was doing social media, basically community management. So I launched all of our social media channels like Facebook, Twitter. I don't even think Instagram existed at the time. Pinterest definitely didn't, but launched all of our social media channels and worked on building our audience. And by audience, in this case, I would say our customer base. So we were a subscription program. So we had a base of customers who would get our product every month, and worked on building out the community, you know, our community of snackers. We called them happy snackers. So building out the community of happy snackers through social media. Now, at the same time, I was doing a lot of outreach to bloggers and influencers. That's actually how I got really interested in working in this space to begin with. I found myself reading a lot of health and fitness and food blogs in my last couple of years in the Navy, and found myself, you know, making all kinds of lifestyle, crazy lifestyle changes that my husband would probably roll his eyes at. I would like got really into running. I ate almond butter and I started eating vegetables. I was doing all of this because I was being influenced by what other people were doing and saying online. And so part of my role at the beginning at NatureBox was to take that same approach, but to introduce our products to these influencers. So a lot of what I did in the beginning, in addition to building up our community of snackers through social media, was to reach out to influential bloggers online and get them to talk about our product. And now influencer marketing is a huge, huge channel for pretty much every major CPG and just general retailer brand. Influencer marketing has really grown over the last 4 years, but that was kind of the first area that I really worked on heavily at NatureBox. So I ran social media and our influencer marketing strategy for about a year or two. And then what I found over time was that the actual advertising space was changing. So no longer were bloggers making a lot of their money through display ads, as they had been over the last few years, but they were starting to view sponsored content, which is very similar to what you would call like a native ad in your Facebook newsfeed. This idea of bringing the advertisement more front and center and making it more organic to your reading or consumption experience was starting to really take off. And so I ended up working a little bit more focused on our influencer marketing channels, specifically using paid media and sponsored content to drive new customer acquisition for the brand. So I worked on that for a couple of years. And then from there, most of my career growth at NatureBox really started transitioning more and more into paid marketing as a vehicle for driving customer acquisition and less around the social media and community management aspect that I had worked on in the beginning.
It's just interesting, like as the company grew, you grew with it. And you know, it's just interesting, like, because I imagine most startups in that space, they start out relying on free promotion through social media and bloggers. But then, you know, as the company grew and had more money, then you grew into more paid advertising and you just kind of rode that wave to the top.
It was, yep. I mean, there was a bit of being in the right place at the right time, but more importantly, really capitalizing on being in the right place and being able to grow with the industry. It's been, I mean, and I'm still to this day work in influencer marketing. So it's been really interesting to look back over the last 5 years and see the changes. And for me, when I started from the perspective of being a reader. And so while I had never done this on the brand side, I had never, you know, done influencer marketing for a brand. To be honest, a lot of brands hadn't done influencer marketing, period. So there weren't a lot of people at the time that had this experience, right? It wasn't like I was coming into an e-commerce company and saying, hey, let me run your paid search. Paid search has been around for 10 years and I don't know what the heck I'm doing, right? I was coming into this experience or this opportunity where there were very few people that would have even had this experience, period. But, you know, through kind of just a hustle and an interest in learning and doing it and learning it by doing it, we were able to make it work. And so to kind of like wrap that all up to a nice little package and kind of, you know, present it in a more succinct manner, that is, it's going to be very hard to find a role when you transition out of the military that doesn't, if you don't have the exact experience, it may be very hard to fit yourself as a square peg into a round hole. What's more important is being able to take your experience, translating that to areas that you may not necessarily, like on paper, look like you fit. But if it's something new or something that needs to be figured out for the first time, you may be very well positioned to succeed and to capitalize in that type of environment.
That's great. And What did you like most and least about life in an early stage startup?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that I like most, hands down, was the career growth and the ability to experience so much in such a short period of time. Learning different marketing channels, getting to work with really, really smart people, and being exposed to a lot of different facets of an organization was critical for me, right? So I didn't have the luxury of many, many years, right? So when you're if I'd started maybe 4 years earlier, I would have worked from more in more junior positions. I would have grown slowly over time. I would have, you know, been sort of at this very junior level where I wouldn't have had I would not have had the opportunity to be exposed to the different departments and the ways in which the departments work together. Whereas when you come to an early stage startup, you're only 5 people, then you're 10 people, right? Then you're 20 and then you're 50, but you're very intimately involved in the way the departments work together. So for me, that meant getting experience with product team. And the fun thing about NatureBox is product isn't just the engineering, the technical product, it's also the food product, which was the most delicious part of the job. You get experience with customer service, with operations. How do customer service and operations work with marketing? How does marketing need to work with product and tech, right? So things that would have taken me a lot longer to learn in sort of a more traditional company, maybe a larger, more structured company, I was able to get exposure to that and understand and have an opportunity to work cross-functionally in a way that I probably wouldn't have if I had joined a more structured company.
Yeah,
and then, oh, you asked another
one.
That's a good one. So, least favorite thing about working at a startup, but ultimately I think may have been the most impactful, and that is the path that you're going to take is going to be about 99% up to you, right? And maybe I'm oversimplifying that because there are a lot of factors like, does the startup make it, right? A lot of startups don't make it after the first 1, 2 to 3 years. But sort of barring those types of situations, the only thing that you're really limited by is what you're willing to do and learn and what type of course you want to put yourself on. And for me, that was very hard, right? So things like negotiating for your salary, negotiating for your title, having a mentor, for example. There isn't a strong, there a lot of startups, again, depending on how small we're talking, and I'm talking early stage startups, may not have a great mentorship program. There may not be enough people at the company. Your boss may be the only person there, right? And so some of those, quote, benefits that you would have from a more structured company, it might not necessarily be in existence at a really early stage company. So being able to learn from many different people, right? So I think that was probably the hardest thing for me, was that lack of structure, right? When you're in the Navy or the military, you're in a year group, you're in a class, you have a community and everyone, you know, you do this tour for 27 months and then you do this tour for 18 months and then you do this tour for 2 years. And every now and then you have a little bit of wiggle room to be able to, you know, eke out here and move over there and maybe try something new. But it is very structured. And so for me, realizing that the only way I was going to be able to grow was going to be if I kind of like took ownership and control of that was really, really hard in the beginning. It's just not a skill that you learn in the military. And I think it's probably a skill that when you're more junior, you're not comfortable with naturally, keeping in mind, I was only 25, 26 when I transitioned out. And so I was still very junior in my career. So there were a lot of things that I hadn't been comfortable with or gotten a chance to do. And that's really hard in an early stage company. You have to be very, very comfortable with the lack of organization and the lack of structure to support you as an individual, because it's not just about you as an individual. It's kind of about like the greater company and being able to trust that as the company grows and as you succeed, more and more of those resources and that structure will be there. And it was, which was great. And again, for me, that was one of the hardest parts about being at a startup, but at the end of the day, it ended up being one of the best things.
Yeah, I echo that. And I don't think I realized when I was on active duty just how much structure there was, you know, for me at the Naval Academy, as well as in the Navy, of just recognizing that there were guardrails and a defined path for everything. And yes. Then, you know, I think that civilian life is definitely not like that, but startups even more so, where you are pioneering and inventing things as you go along. So it seems like the most extreme transition you could have is directly what you did from the military to a very early stage company.
Yes, I think that's a very good way of putting it. And again, I didn't appreciate the time because I didn't know enough people that had been in similar shoes. I didn't talk to anyone. I didn't ask around, hey, what was challenging for you or what can I expect? I was like, this seems like a great idea. Let's jump in. And again, to be fair, it was a great idea and it did work really well. And I'm extremely, extremely grateful for the opportunities that I had there because ultimately I wouldn't be on this career path if not for it. But you have to be a little bit uncomfortable with the chaos and with the unknown.
What about, and this, you know, this may be a similar answer to what you just gave, but I'm just wondering in those first couple years out of the military, in what ways you felt ahead of your peers and in what ways you felt really behind your peers because of your military service?
Yeah, excellent. So the first way that I felt really behind my peers was just sort of in the knowledge of the marketing knowledge, right? I didn't know. Here's a funny story I love to tell people. So when you're a surface warfare officer, CPA is the closest point of approach. You want a very high CPA because you don't want your ships to get too close to one another and run into each other. In marketing, a CPA is the cost per acquisition. And generally speaking, the lower the cost per acquisition, the better. I also learned things like to deploy means you put software live on a website. Very different, different definition of deploy. So to be honest, like at a very basic level, a lot of marketing and startup terminology and ways of thinking were new for me. Now I had a very patient boss who was the CMO and co-founder who taught me things like what is a CPM? How do you acquire a customer? What is scale? What is efficiency, right? These are just things that I didn't learn because I had never been exposed to media and marketing at a really basic level. So that was probably the hardest part for me. And even now in my new role at an advertising agency, not having had like really, really structured media experience growing up in my career, I do see how far behind I am in terms of traditional media and in ways of looking at ways of evaluating media that are new for me. Now, in terms of where I may have been ahead of my peers, I can say quickly, and that is it's two things. So if it's okay, I'll give two answers.
Yeah.
And the first is being uncomfortable in situations where you're not sure what you have to do and you have to figure it out, right? So for me, that was a lot. That was, you know, wearing many hats. When I joined the Navy, I was an electrical officer and I had a division of 10 sailors. And I wouldn't know, you know, much more than how to change a light bulb if my life depended on it, right? But you learn how to delegate responsibility, but not accountability. You learn how to manage a team. Those are some of the biggest lessons that I took out of the Navy that have been really, really helpful. Now, it's interesting because when you're at an early stage company, it's unlikely that you're going to manage a big team, right? So things like knowing how to manage a team wasn't really that useful for me in the first 3 years that I was at NatureBox because I didn't really have a team to manage in the beginning. You're much more of an individual contributor, roll up your sleeves and get it done. But again, that's where I also felt somewhat ahead of my peers in that I had spent a lot of time rolling up my sleeves and figuring it out on my own in the Navy, and I was comfortable doing that, you know, in a new environment as well. And then as I got a little bit more experienced in my career over the last, call it 5 or 6 years, I've now been presented with opportunities where I am able to manage a bigger team, but it's in a particularly chaotic environment, which is being at an advertising agency that's also a startup. Right. So it's sort of like all the compounding experience that I have sort of building up to where I am right now. And I'm very comfortable with the chaos of the agency. And I'm very comfortable with being able to manage a team of people, some of whom are my age, some of whom are much younger than me. And, you know, some of whom may even be older than me. And that's the situation that I'm more comfortable in because I had that experience much earlier in my career.
That's great. Before going on to Oxford Road, I guess one last question for NatureBox is, what advice would you give to any veteran who's thinking of working at a startup?
My advice would be to talk to as many people as you can, even if obviously they're not veterans per se. I think what's really important, and again, this is where it gets a little nuanced, right? Are we talking about an early stage company where you're employee number 3 or even a later stage company where you're employee number 10 or 100, right?
Yeah.
I think two things are really important that you didn't necessarily likely get the experience of doing the military, and that is figuring out you know, what is the culture and does that culture resonate with you? Do you feel that the culture is a good fit for you? Do you feel that you can contribute to that culture and that you're aligned with the company's values, right? So in the military, you have very high level values that unite the services, your individual communities, your individual branches of the service. But it's pretty high level, right? Ship to ship, a lot of the values are very similar. In a startup, that's absolutely not the case. So really understanding the, and by the way, if anyone is listening to this who's not going to a startup, I still think this is great advice. And that is what type of culture does that company have? What are their values? And do you want to align yourself with that culture and with those values? And then the second thing I think that's really important is really getting to understand who your manager is going to be. As everyone probably knows, you don't get a say in who you report to in the Navy ever. And at least to mine, for the most part, I can't think of many opportunities in the service where you get to go into a job and pick it based on who your manager is. And I have been really, really fortunate over the last 4 or 5 years to learn from, be mentored by, and be led by some incredible managers. And they have made all the difference in my professional career and my development. And so the opportunity of getting to meet and be interviewed by, and heck, even get to somewhat interview them to understand if they would be a good manager for you is something that you just don't get to do in the military. And those can be those to me are the two biggest things that can set you up for success when you're deciding whether or not a job at a specific startup is right for you.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's talk about Oxford Road just for a little bit. What led you to Oxford Road?
So I had been working with Oxford Road for almost 2.5 years. They were an agency that I had actually hired while I was at NatureBox. So, and I mentioned earlier, I was working pretty extensively in influencer marketing. And one of the channels for customer acquisition that I ran was podcast advertising. And this is especially exciting for me to be on a podcast because I have been working in podcast advertising for the last 3 years. It's by far my favorite marketing channel. And Oxford Road has been the leader in podcast advertising pretty much since its inception 3 years ago. So I had actually hired Oxford Road to be my podcast agency while I was at NatureBox. They helped me manage and scale that form of media as a efficient channel of acquisition. And when I was approached by the CEO about a year ago, he'd asked me if I would be interested in coming over to the other world, which is the agency side. And to be honest, you know, my first instinct was, no, thank you. I really don't think that I'm an agency person, whatever that means. I don't think that I'm an agency person. I much prefer to stay on the client side. Thank you. But he is a fantastic salesperson, but more importantly, a great CEO and leader. And over the next couple of weeks, we chatted some more. And the opportunity to me was really interesting. So I gave a little bit of advice earlier, right, around looking at a company based on their values, based on their mission, based on the culture, and based on who your boss is. And so I obviously was applying a lot of these, kind of guardrails and litmus tests for my own professional career search. At the time, I was looking for a new opportunity. I was looking to get marketing experience, whether it was a different channel of marketing or perhaps a different type of product, right? So NatureBox is an e-commerce subscription snack program or snack product. I wanted to learn how to advertise products that maybe were not e-commerce or were not subscription or were not food. So I was doing a bit of research and diligence on opportunities in the space, broadly speaking. And what I found was I was really struggling to find the sweet spot for me for, you know, how big was the company, how small was the company, what was the role, what was the marketing budget, what channels were they advertising in. And so when this opportunity at Oxford Road presented itself, I realized I was like the bear whose porridge was finally not too hot and finally not too cold, but the porridge was just right, because the opportunity was to actually open up the San Francisco office for the agency, which is based in Hollywood down in Los Angeles. And part of this opportunity was to open up the San Francisco office and get to have a hand in and touch all of the business that the agency works on that runs out of the Bay Area. So for me, this was really the porridge was just at the right temperature, because in addition to being able to still be part of a growing startup, being able to have an impact on the culture and growing that culture through a new office while still being able to learn new media channels and work on different products was just such a win for me.
That's great. I can only imagine how exhilarating it's been to open up an office and grow and expand that. And what is, you know, in general, as an account director, what does your day-to-day life look like now?
Exhilarating is a good word. My day-to-day looks nothing the same every day, but it is exhilarating. It is absolutely a roller coaster. So what's really interesting about this job specifically is that we are ourselves a startup. We are about a 3.5-year-old agency, and we also work with startups. And so having been in a startup myself, I understand the unique challenges and somewhat chaotic nature that you can have there, right? Nothing's going to be perfect. You have to do what you can where you are with what you have. And so being able to work with our clients that are also in that stage is really satisfying for me because I come from that environment. I'm fairly comfortable in that environment. Day to day, every day looks a little bit different, but I actively manage 2 clients and I provide support for the team here in San Francisco that manages an additional 7 clients. So I have a bit of hands-on activity with my own specific clients. I spend time every day on client calls. We are a very we're a performance marketing agency. And so what that means is when we are buying media, we are looking at it and we are measuring the effect of the media based on the client's KPIs. So is their goal to acquire new customers, new leads, new subscribers, whatever that KPI is, we hold ourselves to performance standards based on their allowable cost per acquisition. So for me, it's a lot less of just day-to-day account management and more actively managing the media and the campaigns to ensure we're hitting the client's KPIs. So in that case, a lot of what I do for my clients directly reminds me a lot of what I did at NatureBox. We see ourselves as an extension of their marketing teams, and so I'm very hands-on with the media and with the optimizations that we're making on the media. Now, on a side note, a lot of the work that I do also supports the team here, as I mentioned, that works with the other 7 accounts. So being able to provide strategic direction and recommendations to them for the various media channels that we're working on. And I think I mentioned this earlier, one of the real selling points for me for this opportunity was getting to learn more about radio and TV media, which is not something that I had a lot of experience with before joining Oxford Road. So a lot of what I do day to day as well is just educating myself on these new media channels and understanding how we use them as an agency and how our clients can best leverage them. But advertising is still my favorite.
That's awesome. Well, I know we're running short on time. There's a million other questions I could ask, but I'm just wondering, maybe as a catch-all, what else would you want listeners, any veteran listening, to know, or other kind of final words of wisdom that you'd want to pass along to them?
So I guess my final word of wisdom would be, you have to own your transition and your career, both from the minute that you decide that you're interested in transitioning, but also even beyond that. And I know it really varies based on the industry that you might choose, whether that's an industry that keeps you in one geographic location or requires you to move more frequently, or if you're looking to make changes and join different companies within a general industry. But regardless, whether it's the minute that you're transitioning or at any point in your career, so much of this is now in your hands, which is daunting and exhilarating at the same time. So for me, the recommendation that I wish I had followed a little bit better was spend more time talking to other people, listening to other people's stories, seeing how people made the pieces fit together, but don't be overwhelmed or frustrated if you don't have the same experience, because and I think you see this from the stories that you've shared on your show, and that is everyone's experience looks a little different. So don't necessarily try to compare yourself. I think I tried to take too much of a kind of one size fits all, and like, this is what veterans do when they transition, therefore this is what I should do. And I'm really glad that I didn't, even though it was very hard for most of that transition.
That's great. Yeah, I think it is a fine balance of looking at examples and learning from others, and then also realizing that everyone's got their own formula for what's going to make them happy, and so forging your own way as well.
Yeah, so taking the advice, listening to other people's stories, but not necessarily having to script it just like someone else did it.
That's great. Well, Molly, I found our conversation really energizing. I know it'll be helpful for the listeners. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate the opportunity to share more about the last 8 years.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback, because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.